name is Aiden Bartek. I'm a senior in the broadcast media class at Pius X High School. We recently celebrated Pro-Life Day at Pius X, and we were blessed to have Teresa Ron, the mother of four Pius graduates and the mother of Nathan, whose story you'll hear in this podcast episode. And remember, your life matters and God loves you. Enjoy.
Isaiah 43:1, do not fear, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. Recently, I was listening to a homily from Father Mike Schmitz, and he shared that there are people that we are surrounded by, and they are surrounded by people, but yet they feel invisible. They feel alone. In fact, the Surgeon General of the United States has declared that there's an epidemic of loneliness. It's a lack of connection to other people. And the most people that are affected by this are the ages from 15 to 24. And that's this group right here. So, you may ask yourself, who am I? Do I matter? Do I have anything to offer? Well, the real story is, you do matter. God chose you, and God gave you the life to be part of his plan, and he has a purpose for you. I'm here today to share the story of my son, Nathan, because he lived a good life, and he had a big impact on people, even though he was very young. He had meaning and purpose. Nathan was born on August 5th, 1985. He was a lot of fun. He smiled a lot, and he was very happy. Adam, at the time, was 2 years old, and Adam and Nathan were very good friends, but Nathan wasn't very old before he proved that he was pretty good competition for Adam. They were good brothers, but they would irritate each other, which sometimes led to a wrestling match or a fight or an argument. But by the time that Nathan was age 5, Adam could no longer get the best of him because Nathan was pretty strong. Nathan went to school at St. Joseph's, and he was very popular among his classmates. He was not shy, and he was a natural leader. When he did something, others followed. And there's a picture that I show that when he was in kindergarten, he always liked his hair slicked up just right because he wanted to impress the girls. And so if you look in the picture, there's a boy who was following him, had the same hairdo. Nathan was bright, and he had a great sense of humor, but sometimes he would get himself and his friends into a bit of trouble with his teacher because he laughed a lot in school. His teachers were very forgiving, and he made them laugh too. Nathan loved music. He loved to sing, and he loved his brothers. He was always entertaining them in a very special way, always ready to have a good time. Nathan loved sports. He was a good athlete, and he seemed to begin to play sports since he was very young. When he played his first game of soccer, he was very excited about it, and he was in the end of the game. Their team had scored 11 points, and he had scored 9 of them. He was very fast runner and very competitive. Nathan loved basketball, and I have a slide that one of his teammates was your coach, Coach Adam Brill. He played basketball with Nathan. And so I thought that was pretty cool. Nathan loved baseball and football, and he played for the Lincoln Rebels, and he played for the Executive Club. He was a running back for the football team, and then he loved to pitch and catch for the Rebels. There's a picture that I like to show of his team. And when you look at it today, three of those people are very important. One was, he played with Jabba Chamberlain, who was a pitcher for the New York Yankees, and he went on to play for the World Series. He played for the Detroit Tigers, and then he retired. Two of the other boys that he played with is Scott and Rusty Montgomery, and of course they are graduates of Pius, and they went on to be Franciscan friars and are now Father Innocent and Father Angelist. And I know that, like I said, they're graduates of Pius. And then the other brothers that are brothers to Alex Gordon. And he was Nathan played with him as well. So it's pretty amazing. There's one other connection that I found that there's a player that he had with, his name was Nick Kamak, and his sister is Catherine, and she is now your teacher, Mrs. Norman. I don't know if she's here in this crowd. There she is. There we go. So I just love these connections that we have. Nathan's two close friends were Andy Pitch and Alex Essay, and on they had a special togetherness on confirmation night. Nathan was very spiritual. He was preparing for confirmation. He wrote a poem: "Take my soul to the awesome place so I can see your holy face. Take me and my whole family so we can be filled with happiness and glee." So he wrote this poem when he was very healthy. And he had no idea what was going to come in his life. Another thing about it, he really wanted to go. One day he came home and he says, "Mom, I want to go to confession every day." And I'm like, "Okay." So I said, "Let's figure out a plan. How are we going to make that work?" And so he told me, he says, "Oh, I'll just get up early and go to school and I'll go to confession." I thought, okay. So every day he got up early and he went to confession. And I thought, okay, this is just going to last a week or so. And no, the next week came by and he was going to confession again. And so then I was at school and I ran into his teacher, Sister Jacqueline, and I said, "Gosh, what are you teaching in this school? You've got my Nathan, going to confession every day." And she laughed and she says, "Well, we've been talking about the Pope and how the Pope goes to confession every day." So here he was, and he thought, if the Pope goes to confession every day, I should too. Nathan loved God very much, and he prayed a lot. And when he prayed, he really prayed. At night, we always had this routine that we would kneel down and say our prayers together. And when it got to his turn, he was always would go on this litany of praying for people. He had such a big heart, and he would always pray for people with, like, the worst ailments, people who were blind, people who didn't have a mom or dad, people that didn't have anybody praying for them. He just had such a big heart. In January of 1998, when Nathan was 12 years old and in the sixth grade, he started to have some mysterious pain. It first was just a pain in his neck, and then he had a pain down his leg. And like he had pulled a muscle, he had been playing basketball, and so he said, "I just got a pulled muscle." And then finally he started having blurred vision. Well, on January 27th, I took him to the doctor, and he was concerned. So he ordered an MRI, and it revealed a tumor, and suddenly our lives changed, and we were very afraid. But from that moment on, God had asked people to care for us. Next. The doctors helped us to make the decision to go to Iowa City to have the surgery done by a pediatric neurosurgeon, Dr. Meneses. He's one of the most well-known surgeons in the country. Go to the next one. Nathan and I drove home from the hospital to prepare for the trip to Iowa City. I was by myself. My husband was in Las Vegas at a business trip, and so I was having to deal with all of this all by myself. But people immediately started to call and stop by for help. But it was amazing how fast people found out about it. Someone had called our parish priest, Monsignor Pleskoch, and he came over because he wanted to anoint Nathan. Now, for me to think that this boy, who was always so healthy, was all of a sudden receiving the sacrament of the sick, was overwhelming to me. And the reality of it hit me really hard. But I was not alone. I looked around the room, and the room was full of people. God had sent Monsignor and a bunch of friends to be with us, to give me hope and to pray with me, and I needed that. And then God's words came to me: "Do not be afraid. I am with you." And I just felt this warmth come over me, and it was like God was giving me a hug. These words gave me great peace and comfort, and it gave me the courage and the strength to go on this journey with Nathan. Nathan and I were both thankful for that sacrament, and it helped to prepare us for what was to come. Next. At 4:30 in the morning in the fog, we arrived in Iowa City in the ambulance. We had to take a 5.5-hour ride to Iowa City. And we would be there for the next 15 and a half days. And on our first day there, Nathan said to me, "Mom, why did this have to happen to me? I'm just a little kid." Well, as a parent, I had no idea what to say. I just cried. And finally, some words came to me. And I said, "Nathan, why not you? God chose you. And he must feel that you are the only one that can handle this." And then I told him, I reminded him, that there were so many people praying for him, and that I would always be with him through everything, that I would never leave him. And it helped Nathan so much that when I look back to this, he never asked why again. I truly believe at that moment, he knew that he had to surrender his will to God. Nobody told him to do it. He just knew that he had to do it, and he was only 12. The first night at the hospital, I was exhausted. I had been up for a long time, and I finally fell asleep. I was sleeping in a cot next to Nathan's bed. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, something woke me up. And I looked around. Nathan was sleeping soundly. And all of a sudden, I felt God's presence in the room. And I cried from the depths of my heart. It was a cry that, and I asked God, why Nate, Lord? He is such a great kid. He could do so much for you. I thought about the story of Abraham and Isaac. I know you're all familiar with it. And I remembered how God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. This story's always been hard for me. You know, how could a father willingly sacrifice his son, even for God? But Abraham was so obedient and so faithful. He did everything he was told to do. But right before he was to sacrifice his son, God spared him. And I thought to myself, I must do this. If I'm obedient and I'm faithful, then maybe God will spare Nathan. Maybe he will heal him. Maybe he will grant him a miracle. And then I prayed, God, too, I will be obedient. I surrender my son to you. Do with him as you will. Again, God's words were speaking to me. And then I turned to Mary, and I said, Mary, you had to say yes to God at a time when you had no idea what to expect. Help me to say yes to God for whatever you want of me. And then I prayed a rosary like I never prayed before. And finally, I fell asleep. And in the morning, I wasn't sure if I'd had a dream or if it was real. But all I know was a great sense of peace had come over me. Next. The day before surgery, Nathan received a phone call from his friend, Andy, who informed him that he and another friend, Alex, had shaved their heads. Now, Nathan was touched. So remember the story of his hair being slicked up and everything? He loved his hair. So when the surgeon was telling him all the things that were going to happen to him for surgery, he said, do you have any questions, Nathan? He said, yeah, do you have to shave my whole head? Well, here his friends beat him to it. And it's just amazing. We received this picture while we were still in the hospital. It takes courage to do things for others, right? But they went on. They were on the news. They were in the paper. They just had so much love for their friend. Next, Nathan had surgery, and we truly believe it was a miracle because everything was fine. He could walk and talk and all that sort of things afterwards. He went on to have 4 big treatments of chemotherapy and 36 brain radiation treatments. He never complained. He did all that he was asked to do because he had hope. He knew that God could do anything. Go ahead. Nathan had to give up the gifts, though, that God had given to him. He lost his hair. He lost his ability to play sports, and man, that was tough. He had hearing loss, and he lost his eyesight until he was almost blind. He lost his strength, and he lost his ability to walk. But he never lost his faith, and he never lost his sense of humor. In fact, those two became the most important to him. This was a photo from Mother's Day, and at this time he was able to go back to school for the very first time because he couldn't during chemotherapy treatments. When he went back, you can see he looks like a different kid. And his friends saw him, and you know what? They really didn't know what to say when they saw him. Nathan felt that. And so all of a sudden, he said, hey, do you want to hear a story? And they said, yeah. So he sat in the middle of the classroom, and he told story after story after story. And then his friends realized, you know what? He's the same kid. He has not changed at all. One day when Nathan was watching TV, there was a story about Mary apparitions. And that's the story where people would go to special sites like Lourdes and Fatima, and then they would drink the water and be cured. After the show, Nathan said to me, Mom, I want to drink holy water from Lourdes. He just believed. He knew that if he did everything that God asked him to do, and even more, that he would be cured. One of my favorite miracles is when Jesus performed was the healing of the blind man. I know you're all familiar with it. It's where Jesus rubs mud on the eyes of the blind man and has him go wash it. And all of a sudden, he can see. Can you imagine how awesome that would be when, if you were blind and now all of a sudden you could see? Well, one day, Nathan must have been thinking about it, and he said, "Hey, Mom, you know, do you think if I take easy cheese and I rub it in my eyes that God will bring my eyesight back?" I mean, he was probably thinking of that same story, right? Because he believed God would heal him. And instead of dwelling on what he didn't have, he was always looking for what he could do. He wanted to go back to school, and he did. He wanted to learn to play the banjo, and he did. He never gave up, and he always had hope, because he truly believed that he would be healed and his eyesight was going to come back. He had great hope. Go ahead. On one thing that Nathan came to understand through his experience was life isn't about what you have or don't have. It's all about love. Jesus tells us in the gospel that the greatest commandment is to love one another. Nate's classmates would come over after school when he was homebound, and they would just sit and talk. They didn't have to be entertained or anything. They would just sit and enjoy good conversation and companionship. That's what was important in life. And Nathan was so thankful for this precious time that he was able to share with his friends and families, because that's all that mattered. All his friends were grateful for that time that they were able to spend with Nathan before he died. Through Nathan's suffering and illness, he grew very close to God. He learned to rely totally on God. And God was bringing out good through Nathan's suffering. And through suffering, others were brought closer to God. They would come over to try to cheer him up and instead left being the ones that were affected. And he's still affecting people still today. And hopefully through Nathan's story, you may come to know God in a different way and just be thankful for your health, for your friends, and for your family. Another important part of Nathan's day was receiving Holy Communion. Sometimes he didn't feel well, but he rarely missed the chance to receive the Blessed Sacrament because it gave him strength. And I was such a witness to this. One summer when we were at home, Deacon Kubot, who's now Father Kubot, would come over and bring communion. And sometimes Nathan was not feeling well. He'd been going through radiation, and he was laying on the couch with a headache or not feeling well. And so Father Kubot would come, and he would knock on the door, and I'd open it, and he'd say, "Jesus is here." And then he'd walk in, and Nathan heard him. And I'm telling you, it was like a wilted flower that was all of a sudden sad, was starting to come up. He received Jesus, and he came to life. I saw that before my eyes. It was all of a sudden he had this life with him. It was so beautiful. You know, the Eucharist is a great gift that God's love for us. God knew that we would need something tangible to touch, to see, to taste, and to see Jesus transformed into bread into his flesh and wine into his blood. This is the most awesome gift that we have in our church. The Eucharist nourishes us, gives us strength to do whatever we are called to do. When it's time to receive our Lord, we should be running down the aisle saying, "Yes, Lord, my beloved, I believe. Come to me," and just fall on the ground before him. It's truly a miracle. You know, that's why we want to receive the body, the blood, and the soul divinity of Jesus Christ. And I saw how that affected Nathan, and I will never miss the opportunity to receive Jesus, ever. Nathan, here he is in the seventh grade. He went back to school, and he was determined. He wanted to work hard. He was blind. Now imagine yourselves. You're in school this year. You can see everything. And then next year you come back, and you're blind. Okay, now how are you going to get around? It's going to be a little tough, right? But he was determined, and his friends were there to help him. And he did not want his friends to feel bad, so he always kind of kept it light. So the teachers were very good at helping him, and so during spelling class, the teachers would have the students do the spelling words, and then they would have Nathan say the word out loud. Well, instead of saying it out loud, he would always sing it. And then there's another time when he was not feeling well, but they always had a cot set up that he could lay down on if he needed to. So one of his teachers he wasn't feeling well, so he laid him down on the cot, and he said, "Hey, Nathan, can I bring you anything?" And he said, "Yeah, can you bring me a Bloody Mary?" And of course, he didn't want it with alcohol, but he had lost his taste, and so he liked spicy things. And then another time, he was one of his teachers was digging around in his backpack, and she said, "Oh, Nathan, I hope you don't mind me digging around in your backpack." He said, "Yeah, but just ignore the picture of the naked lady in there." And she was kind of shocked. He says, "It's okay, I can't see her anyway." You know, but then he has also had this determination, like he came home from school and he wanted to learn the Beatitudes. So he'd make his brother Adam read them over and over and over. And he says, "I want to memorize the Beatitudes. I got to know this." I mean, he just had such determination. Well, on a day in October, Nathan had a focal seizure, and we had to take an ambulance to Omaha Children's Hospital for him to be evaluated. And the MRI showed that the tumor had returned. And now, in addition, not just in that area, but it was all over the brain. And so there was nothing more we could do. And so it was evident that Nathan was going to die. Chris and I had the difficult job of telling Nathan. We just prayed and knew that we would know the right time to tell him. And so after the seizure, they medicate you and sedate you to calm things down. And so later on, he kind of came out of that and he says, "Okay, why did I have that seizure?" And we told him, well, the tumor came back, and we all cried and held each other tight. It was just a moment that I knew that was going to come someday, but I didn't want to think about it. It was very, very hard. Well, after 5 minutes, Nathan dried his tears, and he says, "Okay, this is where I want to be buried. Dad, I want you to give all my clothes to Adam. I also want you to take my money and buy Mom a new refrigerator. She needs a new refrigerator. And get the boys a trampoline. They got to have fun. Buy them a trampoline." And then he told us what to do with his money. I mean, my husband and I, we couldn't believe it. We were sure this final blow would put him in depression and he would become withdrawn, but he didn't. Instead, we found ourselves not dwelling on death, but talking about the joy of going to heaven. Go ahead, next one. Yeah, Nathan had 6 weeks to live, and those 6 weeks flew by. Every second, every minute, every day was very precious to me. We absorbed everything Nathan said. We were at his beck and call, and when he spoke, we listened. God had filled him with so much faith, hope, and charity that we felt every word was a message from God. His days and nights were all mixed up, but we had shared. I said, "Hey, Nathan, if there's anything that you want to tell us or share with us, we'll write it down." Well, he liked that. So sometimes he would wake us up in the middle of the night and said, "I've got something I want you to write down." So we compiled all of this, and we put it into what we call Nathan's advice. And so I did make some folders or have them available for you. But they're pretty amazing things. And, of course, this was through those last 6 weeks of his life that he came up with that. Go ahead. When we asked Nathan about what should we tell your friends after the tumor came back, he said, "Just tell them to come over." And so they did. A friend gave him some money to buy something for himself because he, just to do something. But instead, he wanted to have a party. He says, "I want to have a party for my friends." So we had a party at the Knights of Columbus Hall. Go ahead to the next one. He wanted Taco Inn. He wanted drinks. He wanted decorations. And he wanted a dance party. And so we did. We had a great time. Go ahead, next one. And one more. So one thing I want to share with you is how we had to go to pick out a cemetery plot. This was going to be emotionally hard, difficult, finding a place to bury our son, right? And I think Nathan thought it was going to be hard, so he wanted to make it easier for us. So when it was time to go, he immediately tried to keep things light. Before we left, Nathan was sitting outside in his wheelchair, and all just unannounced, Chris's mom drove up, and she noticed him sitting in the wheelchair outside of our house. And so she came up and she says, "Oh, Nathan, are you going somewhere?" And he said, "Yeah, we're going grave hunting, Grandma." poor Grandma. And then we went to the cemetery and he had all these several requests. He said, "I don't want to be buried under a tree because I don't want a dog to come along and pee on my grave." He says, "I want to be buried out in the open because I want the sun to shine down on my grave and see the angels dance on it." And then it was close to Halloween. This was like October 23rd. And he says, "Okay, Dad, at Halloween, I want you to get one of those bloody hands and have it sticking out of my grave." And my husband is like, "Nathan, don't talk like that. We're not going to talk like that." And he says, okay, Dad. So we're wheeling him around the cemetery. And finally, Nathan says to him again, hey, Dad, at Halloween, will you get a hand and have it sticking out of my grave? And Nathan, and Chris says, Nathan, we have the funeral director here, your grandma's here, and all these people. Don't talk like that. He says, okay, Dad. Well, then I'm wheeling him around. And he says, Mom, will you get a hand and have it sticking out of my grave? And I said, yes, Nathan, I will. I'll do that. And that just pleased him. Well, finally we found the perfect spot. And so when we were, he's sitting there in the wheelchair, and then Chris and I went over to another grave that was close by. It was a mom and two sons that had been killed in a car accident, and we were praying at their gravesite. And all of a sudden we look up and we see Nathan, and he's going, oh, Mr. Sun, Sun, Mr. Golden Sun, please shine down on me. And he sings that whole song. And then he goes into, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. And he sings that whole song. And my husband and I are just looking at each other. And he said, that's it. That's where we're going to bury our son. And you know, I am so grateful for that, because every time I go to the cemetery, I can see my son, you know, sitting there singing that song. We had hospice at our home during the last 2 weeks of Nathan's life, and this was now during the month of November. A hospice, of course, is when it allows you to keep your loved ones at home. It was probably the holiest time of my life. Our house felt like a little church. The day before Nathan died, all of his friends came over to say goodbye to him. Each had a chance to talk to him privately, one-on-one. And in a 10-month period of time, they had gone from saying, hey, Nathan, we miss you, we'll see you later, to, I love you, Nate. I love you. It was so beautiful. Nathan couldn't speak back to them, but I know he heard every word they said, and it was so hard to see them walk away from knowing that they would never be able to speak to him again. Okay. The night Nathan died, on November 25th, something remarkable happened. And before I tell you what happened, I have to tell you two things. First of all, I've always had a love for St. Teresa, okay? Maybe it's because of my name. But I've prayed to her. Prayed for her since I was a little girl, and of course she's the saint that showers down roses from heaven as a sign of God's love for us. And so then I introduced her to Nathan, and we prayed to her as well. And then the other thing was, my husband really wanted a priest to be present at the time that Nathan died. But when you're, you know, in these situations, you have no idea when it's going to happen. So what happened? Minutes before Nathan died, my mother-in-law was sitting in the family room, and she saw someone standing at the door. No knock, no doorbell. So she went to the door and she opened it up, and it was a young boy standing there, and he had a bouquet of roses. And he hands her the roses and he says, these are for Nate. And she was kind of surprised by it. And then he said again, these are for Nate. And so she asked who they were from, and he told her. And she brought him in, and so then I was very reluctant to leave Nathan's side, so I did. I took the roses, and I went over, and I laid them on Nathan, and I said, Nathan, these are your roses. These roses are for you. And the smell was just amazing. And so then again, I thought, okay, I better go put these into a vase. And as I'm doing that, the doorbell rings, and it happens to be our parish associate pastor, Father Huzuka, who just happened to stop by. We hadn't called him or anything. He just stopped by. So then we met him. I met him at Nathan's bedside. And at that moment, Nathan died. You know, the roses were from St. Teresa and the priest for Chris. We were so caught up in the emotion of his death that we didn't realize what really had happened until we reflected on it. It was like St. Teresa walked into our house and she escorted Nathan up to heaven. And God had sent the roses and a priest as a sign of love for us. It was so beautiful. Okay? A few months after Nathan died, I was at our Eucharistic Adoration Hour, and I was missing Nathan so much. I just wanted to be able to hold him again, to speak to him again. You know, my heart just ached for him. And then I felt Jesus say to me, that is how I want you to feel about me, to desire me, for your heart to ache for me. And then I understood that is what Jesus is calling me to do. He wants me to have the desire to be with him in heaven, to want to see him face to face, for my heart to ache for him just as it does for Nathan. So that is my prayer. Every day I start my day offering it to God. I want to live for him. I am no longer afraid to die. In fact, you know, I just know I'm going to see Nathan again, and I can't wait. But a couple weeks before Nathan died, he woke me up early one morning, as he had always a tendency to do, about 5 a.m., and he just said, "Mom, what are you going to do without me? Who's going to tell you you're a good cook? Who's going to sing to you? Who's going to make sure those boys say please and thank you?" And he went on and on with these questions. And tears were just rolling down my eyes. And inside, I didn't know what I was going to do without him. And finally, I said, "Nate, you will always be with me. When I hear music, I will think of you. When I cook, I will think of you. When the boys say please and thank you, I will think of you. And just think, when you get to heaven, you are going to be so busy. You're going to be able to do way more from heaven than you could ever do on this earth." And he was excited about that, and he couldn't wait. And he said, "Yep, when I get to heaven, I'm going to be so busy." Well, I believe that Nathan is busy working from heaven, and I could share with you so many stories of people who have been inspired by Nathan, and this just gives me such great peace and comfort. I am thankful to God for allowing me to experience this time and trial of suffering in my life because I was able to see God in a new way. I was totally dependent upon him and surrendered my will to his. I had to learn to take one day at a time, one moment at a time, 1 minute at a time. I learned that I was not in control and God was the director of my life. By surrendering my will to his, I was able to witness God's love for us in a powerful way. And in the process of facing this challenge, God showed all of us how much we need each other and how important it is to surround ourselves with other people that support us in a very spiritual way. It was and probably always will be the most fruitful time of my life. Before Nathan died, he said to me, "Mom, we need more kids." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Well, I'm driving at the time, and I'm like, "Okay, Nate, well, just, you know, I'm kind of tied up right now doing a lot of things for you." And I said, "You know, I know that, but, you know, we just got to leave it in God's hand." And there was a pause, and he finally said, "Well, God's been talking to me, and he told me to tell you it's time." So anyway, 3 months after Nathan died, I found out I was pregnant, and I was due on Halloween. You know, we talked about Halloween. Do you think that's a little connection there? Yep. And Joe was actually born on October 27th, and he has just been a joy to our life. Well, during the summer after Nathan died, a man who had graduated from West Point Academy and was in the Army moved to Lincoln, and he attended the St. Gregory Seminary in Seward. He found a job at Calvary Cemetery mowing, and one day when he was mowing, he came upon Nathan's grave. He noticed a picture on the headstone, and he said, noticed that he was the same age as his brother, Kevin, who was back in Michigan living a very troubled life. And the seminarian said, "Hey, Nate, you look like a good kid. Will you pray for my brother?" The seminarian did not know our family at all. Well, oddly enough, through a series of circumstances that can no way be considered coincidences, his brother came to live with us 3 years later. When Kevin was in a lot of trouble in May of that year, it would have been 2002, and was going to be sent off to a prison or jail or something like that. And so his brother, who was a seminarian, said, "You know, if I intervene, if he comes to live with me in Lincoln, at least maybe that'll give him a chance." So the probation officer agreed to that. He came to Lincoln, and he started hanging out with seminarians. And he had a conversion, and he found a new friend, and that friend was Jesus. And so he was doing better. Well, then the seminarian knew that he needed to stay in Lincoln, and then we just happened to come get in the story. And the day that this decision was made was on Nathan's birthday, August 5th. Well, Kevin came to live with us, and he attended Pius here. He was here for 2 years. He came, and he left his friends and his family, and he had to start all over. He was alone. But through the help of Pius, through Nathan's classmates, through the faculty here, he grew and he did great. He graduated from Pius. He went on to Benedictine College. He went on to graduate school. And then he went on and he is a doctor in psychology. He's married. He has 5 children, and he is living in Des Moines, and he has his own practice. Well, the seminarian was Father Sean Kilcawley, and he believed that Nathan interceded for Kevin's success, and so he wanted to have a prayer card made so that he could pass it on to have intercession for other people. So we went to Bishop Bruskowitz, asked for permission. The bishop said yes, and so then he made a prayer card. And so he wrote the poem. I think I left copies for all of you. This is it. And so this was all from Father Kilcawley, had this started. And I know that there's a lot of people, these have been out since 2007, and they are everywhere. Nathan is interceding from heaven for anybody who calls upon him. And I will leave you cards, and just please, if you encourage you to ask for Nathan's intercession. Kevin shared with me that, he said, if I had not come to live with you, I would either be dead, in prison, or a drug counselor. And I said, gosh, Kevin, why would you say that? And he said, because those are my 3 best friends. That's what happened to them. And he just said, I just thank you for allowing me to live with you. Next. There's Kevin right there. He's now a doctor. Okay, one more. There he is at our Joe's wedding, which was in August of 2023, his beautiful family. And next. Okay. When Nathan was 11 and 12 years old, I said, you mentioned before, he played for the Rebels. Nathan loved baseball, and he was a very talented baseball player. One of the players he played with is the boy that does not have the hat on. It was Jabba Chamberlain. And Jabba was, as you can see, a little chubby kid. He had kind of somewhat of an attitude. But Nathan befriended him because he saw that every time Jabba went to practice or a game, he had to help his dad. His dad was in a wheelchair, and he was handicapped. And so every game, he had to get him in the car or out of the car. And he was just really inspired by that. And so he just wanted to invite him over to our house. So Jabba came over and hung out with us. Well, after Nathan died, Jabba was deeply affected, and we would not find out until years later what an impact that Nathan had made upon his life. As I shared earlier, Jabba went on to be a pitcher for the New York Yankees, and he made his debut in August 7th of 2007, and he became a star overnight. Well, Jabba wanted to carry on Nathan's memory through the number he wore, so Nathan wore the number 8. And when he was pitching, he had to wear other numbers, so when he pitched for Kearney and the UNL, he wore 44, because 4 and 4 is 8, so he added up the numbers to be 8. Well, then when he went to the minors, he was given a number, and it was 53, 5 and 3 is 8. And then when he pitched for the majors, he was given a number, and it was 62, 6 and 2 is 8. Well, then people in New York started asking him, hey, why do you wear that number? And so Jabba told the story, it's because of my friend Nathan, who died of brain cancer. And then that story went in New York Times, all over New York. It went into Sports Illustrated. It was just all over the country. You know, Nathan made a big, huge impact on a young man's life. By what? Being ordinary, being faithful, not being afraid to reach out to someone less fortunate and not as popular as others. You know, never underestimate the power that you have to affect another person's life. Open your eyes to those around you. Don't miss the opportunities that come to you daily. Through your actions and your acceptance of others, you can change lives. I want to encourage you today to have the courage to share your faith. Be not afraid to be excited about your faith. Be not afraid to ask God what He wants of you, and then surrender your life to Him. Be not afraid of suffering, because suffering brings us closer to God. Be not afraid to be holy, for we are all called to be saints. There are so many stories of hope that I could leave you with. The stories of Nathan's presence by answered prayers, they bring me great hope. Recently, Nathan is interceding now for people who have obsession or possessed. A priest in our diocese does exorcisms and has been calling upon Nathan to pray over people. The demons do not like Nathan. They hate him. The priest has shared many stories with us, and it's truly remarkable that Nathan is working hard from heaven, and now he's fighting off demons. Praise God. Satan is real, and he wants more than ever to make people think that he does not exist, but he does. There is great spiritual warfare going on around us, and we have to work harder than ever to keep our prayer life strong and to make our faith the most important thing to us. During Nathan's illness, I kept a journal to document the events of his illness and my spiritual journey. And I was just reading it this past week, and I noticed that each day I was writing, I know that God's going to grant us a miracle. I know that he's going to grant us a miracle. Each day I was writing this. Well, about a week into the journal, then all of a sudden I noticed something, and that was I had already been given a miracle. And that miracle was the gift of Nathan. God chose him to give him to me. And that is a miracle. And I am so grateful for that. Even to have a son so full of God's love, even for 13 years. Life is a miracle. Your life is a miracle. God is so good to us. You know, did Nathan's life matter? It did. And it continues to matter. And it is changing life. When he died, it wasn't the end. It was actually the beginning. You know, does your life matter? Absolutely. All life matters. And who are we to make a decision to end life at any stage of life? God is the creator, and he wants to know that to you, that it is good that you exist. We are his beloved sons and daughters. Praise God.